Sheridan Voysey is well known to many of our listeners as the former presenter and founder of Open House, a program that aired across Australia for several years. During those years, Sheridan was living his dream. But in 2011, he and his wife Meryn discovered the hard way, that life doesn't always turn out the way you plan it. They reached the end of a long and tough road called infertility. And so they packed their bags and headed for the UK to start a fresh chapter and look for some new dreams. Well, one of the new ventures that Sheridan found himself embarking upon, quite unexpectedly, was writing books about things like broken dreams. The first of those was called Resurrection Year, and the latest, which he's just published, is called Resilient, and he joins me now via Skype to have a chat about it. Sheridan, for the next few minutes at least, welcome back.
It is a welcome back, isn't it, Claire? And I love the fact that we can kind of swap roles here, because a lot of people will know that it used to be me asking the questions and you behind the scenes working things out as the producer for Open House. This is so much fun. I'm so looking forward to our conversation.
It is fun. So please be kind to me, won't you?
I'll be kind.
Okay. Well, this book, Resilient, was birthed out of a little experiment that you decided to do not long after you arrived in the UK. Tell us about that experiment.
When I came to the UK, it was a wonderful new beginning for Meryn because she had this great new job at Oxford University. And I came over here, I just left the Open House show, I'd left book contracts and speaking opportunities and things like that. And over here I was a no one. And I didn't have a lot of things on my diary, but I'd really wanted to explore the Sermon on the Mount for some time. That's Jesus' famous speech that has inspired both the Martin Luther King Juniors of the world as well as the Gandhis of the world, Christians and non-Christians. And I really wanted to get into this in some depth, and so I decided to read it every day, either in whole or in part, for a month. And I did that. Some days I'd just read a verse. Other days I'd read the whole thing, the whole way through. It only takes about 15 minutes. And some days it would be maybe just a passage or something. But I did that for a month, and that led on to 2 months, and that went on to 3 months as the sermon really got a hold of me and started to recalibrate a whole bunch of things in my life.
Did you think that it might be a good antidote for how you were feeling at the time? Were you expecting that?
No, I wasn't. I actually thought I just needed to go deeper into what has become this kind of central piece of speech for Jesus about ethics, about relationships and about calling and about a whole bunch of other things, about how we make decisions. I didn't think it was going to help me kind of recover from our, you know, tumultuous years that then led to us coming to the UK at all. It was actually only when I got to the end of the sermon, where Jesus is wrapping up everything that he said, and he gives this famous little story of two builders, one who builds his house on sand, another who is a little bit more appropriate in the way he goes about building. He digs through the sand, he builds his house on a solid foundation. And Jesus says, when the storms of life come, and they come to both, the first guy has his house collapse, the second guy has his house stand, because he's built his house on rock, he's built his house on a solid foundation. And Jesus says, my teaching, everything I've just told you in the Sermon on the Mount, is that teaching. Build your life on this and you will weather life's storms. In other words, you will be resilient. Now, that was a surprise to me, and that started to shape the way that I read the rest of the sermon when I went back the next day and started reading it again.
And you discovered that the sermon was quite a guidebook to life. What sort of things does it cover?
It is so astoundingly comprehensive. The Sermon on the Mount has a fairly logical progression, which I hadn't seen before. It starts off with those wonderful God blesses statements, which are typically called the Beatitudes. So God blesses the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. God blesses those who mourn. They will be comforted, etc., etc. Starts off with those. Those, I think, are a real invitation that Jesus is saying, the doors to my kingdom, the doors to my life are open to anybody, the poor, the mourning, the peacemakers, the persecuted, all the people you wouldn't expect. The doors are open. So it starts off with an invitation. It then goes into a series of statements about our calling. Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Beyond any job that we have or career that we've kind of fashioned for ourselves, this is a profound calling to be little world changers in our own right by following Jesus. Then there's a big section on relationships. Jesus tackles four forces that destroy a relationship. He does that really robustly. This is tough reading at some stage, at some stages, but it's comprehensive, and he gives practical guidance as to how to deal with each one of those forces. Then he goes into spirituality, that our spirituality should be of the heart and not for outward appearance, whether it be prayer or fasting or giving to the poor, or whatever it might be. Then there's a section on choices, how we make good decisions, and then it wraps up with that little parable about the builders, basically then talking about resilience. Go and put all of this into practice and you will be strong.
How would you explain resilience in a nutshell?
Resilience, according to the psychologists, is this capacity to be able to bounce back when we've been bent or stretched out of shape. I think all of us can relate to that when the storms of life come, when trials come, when challenges come at work or in our relationships, we feel bent, we feel stretched out of shape, we feel pushed beyond what we think we can experience, but what we think we can stand. How often do we say, I'm at the end of my tether, or I'm stretched beyond everything that I thought that I could ever do, I'm going beyond any boundary I thought I could go beyond. That's what being stretched is like. The resilience aspect is then kind of falling back into shape. And actually, some psychologists would say it's not just necessarily a case of, you know, being bent and then being kind of bounding back into shape. You can actually come back stronger as a result of the trial. And I think that would fit very much with Jesus' teaching.
For you personally, was there any particular moment when you realized you were becoming more resilient after this experiment?
It's a very good question. I think what happened was that the section on relationships was a really good wake-up call. Well, two things, the section on relationships and the section on calling. When I left the open house show, left Sydney, left Australia, left everything that was going on there, so much of my identity had been built on those three words, which I've been doing for 20 years, writing, speaking, broadcasting. But who am I when nobody's wanting me to write anything, nobody's inviting me to speak at their conferences, and no radio stations are returning my phone calls? It was a very good reminder that there is a calling from God to be something else, to be salt and light in the world. In the Lord's Prayer, which is part of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus teaches us to pray, "Our Father in heaven, holy is your name, may your kingdom come," etc. Our Father, every time we pray that, we are in a sense saying, well, if you're my Father, I am your child. And that was a much better identity for me to build my life on. And I think then when some other disappointments came, I wasn't quite so shocked, I think, not quite so rocked as a result of starting to really land my sense of self there as God's child, as the salt and light of the earth, only because of what Jesus does through our little efforts. And then the relationship section, which is really quite tough, when you then have a challenge with a neighbor, for instance, or somebody that you're working with, or your wife or your husband or whatever, to actually realize, okay, I've got some other resources here. It's not just about getting even. It's not just getting my way. It's not just about not getting angry. It's about reconciliation. All of those things that Jesus talks about in that section of the sermon, I found those to be very, very helpful, very, very timely. And I think, just in a recent experiment with it, which I can't go into details with because it's a relational thing, but I was able to find if I put this stuff into practice, there can be a different outcome as a result, even if it does take a little time to resolve.
I think my favourite theme that you talk about in this book is the one of Jesus' acceptance of all humanity there in the Beatitudes you mentioned. This idea that people who are broken are actually still wonderful and useful in God's eyes. Did that speak to your heart and I guess to your wife's in relation to your own journeys that you'd been through?
Yeah, it's a good reminder, isn't it? When you read through the Sermon on the Mount, you don't find a puppies and daisies approach to life. Jesus is robust. He tackles the darkness of the world without holding back one bit. He talks about there being false teachers out there and, you know, paths that you take are going to lead to destruction, all sorts of things. So it was a good recalibration. And I think, Claire, I think you're right that when we've been through that upside down tumult of then realizing that our dream of having a child was not going to come about, I needed to have that recalibration. And that section that you're addressing, the Beatitudes, I think often we've misunderstood it. Often we say, oh, you know, when God says, blessed are the poor in spirit, we should become poor in spirit. Blessed are those who are meek, we should become meek. Blessed are the peacemakers, we should become peacemakers. That's understandable. But actually what Jesus is really saying, particularly when you get to the bit, blessed are those who are persecuted, blessed are those who mourn, it's not Jesus is really saying for us to become these things. He's actually saying those people who already are these things are welcome in my kingdom. So absolutely, he takes anybody who will come, including those of us who come limping and struggling with broken dreams and also distorted senses of identity as a result of those broken dreams.
Do you think modern Western culture is shaping people who are lacking in resilience?
It's a very good question again, Claire. I think there's no doubt that the forces of Western culture, some of them are good, but if we focus on the bad ones, that are focusing on immediate gratification, and that comes down to everything from the little green button in the hardware store just down the road from me, where if I press it, an assistant has to come and assist me within 60 seconds, otherwise I get my paint free.
Oh, wow.
That kind of thing. We've got high-speed lanes, we've got fast food stores, we've got express lanes at the supermarket and express lanes on the highway. We want things to happen quickly and fast and right now, and we are the king because the customer always is right. And all of that, I think, no doubt, puts us in a position where we expect life to happen on our terms when we want. No doubt that would chip away at any sense of resilience because life is not like that. And very soon we find that life is not like that and we don't actually have the capacity, the resources to be able to then deal with it as a result. Look at some of the people that are living right now in developing countries. Look at those people in Syria right now. All of those capacities they're going to be building as a result of the horrendous challenges they're going through. But they haven't had quite the same Disney discipleship, I sometimes call it, where, you know, we're expecting that our lives will become so perfect and always the prince will always come through in the end. Everything will always work out. There'll always be a bow at the end and there will be a lovely gift waiting for us and be perfect, just what we wanted. We will find that to be a very, very much a challenge as time goes on. And I think we're finding that already now.
Mm-hmm. A question that you touched on a little bit before. A lot of the wisdom in the Sermon on the Mount actually matches a lot of recent findings in psychology. Mm. So it's like the experts are catching up with Jesus in a way, aren't they?
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that Jesus beat the psychologists to their discoveries by 2 millennia. I think that's fantastic. Yeah, when you talk to psychologists like Martin Seligman, who is a positive psychology guy, who's written a book called Flourish, who's looked at the whole area of resilience, he will say that resilience really comes down to 4 or 5 main factors. The first one is positive emotions, being able to amplify and emphasize things like love and peace and contentment and those kinds of things in our lives, and being able to minimize or at least manage things like anger and bitterness and sadness. The second thing he would say is that resilience is built on strong relationships, good marriages, good family relationships, colleagues, a sense of connection to our community. Fourth one would be a sense of meaning, which I always find interesting. Psychologists will say we have to be part of something bigger than ourselves to have a good, strong life. Got to find it, whether it be a political ideology or something, some sort of community engagement or something that takes you out of yourself. And then the fourth one is a sense of accomplishment. Resilient people can say, I do something well. Jesus touches all of those 4 points in the Sermon on the Mount. The positive emotions we've talked about. The fact is, he says, blessed are those who mourn. We've got somebody who's going to come and comfort us in our mourning. He talks about dealing with bitterness when he talks about forgiveness, dealing with anger when he talks about reconciliation. He deals with all those aspects of positive emotions, strong relationships, that whole section there on relationships and the 4 forces that destroy them and how we can have robust relationships. A sense of meaning. Whenever we pray in the Lord's Prayer, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, we are connecting ourselves to a big story that's much bigger than us. The story of God, God's kingdom, and what he's doing to bring his dream about on earth. And then the sense of accomplishment. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. I don't know what sense of accomplishment we could have that was greater than that. So absolutely, Jesus beat the psychologists to their discoveries by 2 millennia.
It's pretty good. Your book Resilient is broken up into 90 short readings, so a little bit like a devotional. What are some of the ways that you imagine people can use this book?
Well, I hope that people will take it slowly, and so they will use kind of one reading every day for 90 days, 3 months. That would be a good way to soak yourself in the Sermon on the Mount. And I take some little backstreets as well. I go into other parts of Scripture as well and see how it ties back to the Sermon on the Mount. But of course, if you want to, and some people have done this too, you can just read two or three stories, sections, readings at a time. I'm also hoping, and the DVD that's coming out next year will help facilitate this, that it will be used in small groups. I would love to see this little book catalyze a little movement of people who are rediscovering the Sermon on the Mount in small groups, who can get together, discuss it, set themselves little experiments and challenges with it, and come back and report as to how well they've done or how well they failed. The fact is, perfection is not important here. It's actually trying to live it out, putting it actually into practice. So personally, in small groups, and there's also the capacity there for whole churches to do it as a teaching package. You could easily do 6 messages on a Sunday, follow it up with the small group resources, and then have people reading it personally at home. That's the way I'd love to see it used. We'll see if it actually does get used that way.
Well, Christmas is not far away, and I'm doing my Christmas list this weekend, Sheridan, so I've got a few people in mind already.
See, and you're a quality person. I always knew that, but even more so now, Claire. Even more so now.
Excellent. I'd like to ask you about this journey that you've been on the last few years of writing and speaking about your own dark valleys. It's led you into this whole new chapter where you're bringing hope to a lot of people. What has that been like for you, entering into other people's, I guess, valleys and giving them hope in the midst of that?
It's been a turn in my life and ministry that I was never expecting. Really, as I was doing on Open House, I've kind of been this communicator, an apologist would be the technical word, somebody who would talk about the Christian faith and try to make sense of it in the current culture that we're in. And then here I am talking about broken dreams, and then I'm kind of in this other zone and field altogether, which the response has just been overwhelming. Whenever I speak at a conference about this, the response is huge. And it's been very interesting to see what has resulted. I wrote a blog post recently which tried to encapsulate some of this that was called The Tribe of the Scarred. That's what it feels like Meron and I have been initiated into. When you are a caring person, empathy can take you very closely to somebody and their pain, or to a group of people and their pain, just by listening to people, talking to them, asking them some questions that may help to help them to see things in a different light, whatever. Empathy can take you really close to the tribe of the scarred. Scars get you into the tribe of the scarred. And when Resurrection Year came out with the story of our 10-year journey through the wilderness of infertility, what happened was that was kind of like me kind of pulling up the sleeves of my arm and showing the scars that I had from my battles, and that almost being like an initiation rite. People saying, oh, okay, you've got the scar, come on into the tribe. And once in the tribe, then people share with you at a level you've never had before. And so people telling me things that they've never shared with anybody, even family members, people, couples coming into our lounge room downstairs and revealing things that, you know, they haven't been able to share with anybody else because we're part of the tribe. So there is something in when you get the strength to not just share your story for your own healing, there's a time to do that with a counselor, a pastor, some friends, but actually share your story for others' healing, that you'll be very surprised as to the tribe it initiates you into and the level of help and service you can bring to others as a result of kind of being one of them.
And have you found that encouraging personally as well, that process of sharing and being in that, as you call it, tribe? Does it give you extra strength for your own journey?
It gives wisdom, and wisdom, I truly believe, leads to strength, which leads to resilience, definitely. When you are engaging people at that level of the heart, and where people are telling you about, I don't know, their husband being arrested on child abuse charges, or their marriage disintegrating, or all sorts of things. I've had murders, all sorts of things that people have shared. When you're hearing that kind of stuff, number one, you are very slow to speak. It teaches you to listen even better. Number two, the wisdom that you can actually develop as you walk with these people through their own wilderness journeys, and as you walk with God through it, with all the yelling and the screaming and the shaking of the fists at heaven and everything else that comes with that, when you walk with God through that, it is profound, the level of wisdom and learning that you can have as a result of that. That does lead to strength. There's no doubt about it. I journal all the time after I've had these kinds of conversations, just to try and work out what is going on here and learning the lessons that are inherent in it. There are so many lessons inherent in these wilderness journeys. And absolutely, they lead to strength.
Well, Sheridan, thank you for your time. You've given a lot of people a lot of hope, I'm sure. And thanks for bringing us the gift of this new book, Resilient. One last question. When can Australia expect to see you visit next?
I'm hoping it's next year. I'm in conversation with two conferences that are both kind of interested, and we've just kind of got to nail it down with an okay, you're coming. So I'm waiting for that email, and as soon as I get it, you, Claire, Chait, are going to be the first to know.
Excellent. Sheridan, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Claire.